You want to do this?
Let's do it, buddy.
Cool. Tim, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. All right. So I wanted to have you on here. So actually, and I'll have you introduce yourself here, but I wanted to have you on here because you and I talked about when you were transitioning from Constant, became part of Flexjet, and taking some of the safety reporting systems that you had in place and those processes, and you had gotten them dialed in. And then when you moved into Flexjet, we were just talking through some of the challenges you ran into and also how you made some changes and kind of got those new processes in place. So yeah, if you can, please introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and then also let's dive into this because I want this to be practical so anybody else that's in a safety role or maybe director of maintenance or business owner could keep some of these things top of mind.
For sure. So Tim Wade, I'm the Director of Environmental Health and Safety for Flexjet. And if you're part of a flight company, that would essentially mean that I oversee our ground safety portion. And then we have a Director of Flight Safety that oversees our flight safety and our pilots as well. Started off in aviation back in 2007. I was working Apache helicopters in the Army. And then I transitioned out and started building my career to 2016 when I came over to Constant Aviation as their EHS manager. And worked for Constant all the way up to a director of environmental health and safety just prior to us being acquired by our sister company, Flexjet. So it was essentially a great move on Flexjet's part because the board and Ken Rickey, I've always felt like they are able to, they're almost able to see into the future. They're really good at reading the water and seeing where the industry is going. And they saw the enormous shortage of mechanics coming down the pipeline. They know more retiring than coming into the pipeline. So they thought, you know, what better way to secure a incredible maintenance foundation by merging with Constant, who already had 500 to 700 mechanics at the time. It was a huge workforce. So now we're able to fully support Flexjet with our maintenance platform. And now we're all one big happy family.
Nice. Okay. So let's dive into, I want to come back to that technician shortage and some of those aspects, because I imagine that plays a pretty significant role as you oversee safety now for 5,000 employees roughly and 300 aircraft. But going back to the safety reporting, so can you walk us through some of the processes that you put in place when you were at Constant and kind of what the situation was, what you were running into before, why you put it in place, and then what the kind of results were from that?
Sure. So we found way back in 2018 that SMS was not just a fluffy title to have with your organization, that it was something actually, when you dial it in properly, is something great to have for the organization and works well. So not only did we want that, but we wanted to be one of the first MROs to achieve the voluntary Part 5 program through the FAA. And the reason we wanted to be first was not to have the bell ringing of, yes, we are the first, but when you are the first ones going through a process through the FAA, they work very well with you because they're not just seasoned to it to look at what's wrong and shove you off. So this was a great opportunity for us to work with our FISDO, the CMU, and to actually work with them, both of us learning how to get through the SMS process. So that's why we started so early with SMS. The processes we had to put in place took a lot of looking inward. Are our SOPs set up and properly written to for our employees to know what they're supposed to be doing, when they're supposed to be doing it? Are they easy to use? That's one of the biggest things is, mm-hmm. Do you have not only ease of access to the procedures, but are they easy to use as well? Does your fall protection SOP have 30 pages of nonsense and a little paragraph of what they actually need to be doing? So they need to be easy to be used, ease of access to get to them. So the big thing we put in place was proper reporting. We had paper reporting, PDFs, there were even electronic PDFs, and they worked pretty well at the time. But to go from just internal reporting to a full spectrum SMS program, you needed something more robust. We started looking at the different softwares that are out there, and this is not knocking any of the softwares because there are some great software platforms out there. But there wasn't that one program that not only met our needs, but met the budget as well. Because usually when you get into the better software programs that meet your needs very well, you get 30 other things that come along with it that you don't really need, but you're paying for them anyway. And then the ones that don't really meet your needs, they're a little more consistent. It's like, well, I do need this program, but it doesn't work well for us. So we actually ended up building our own program. We used a program called Airtable, which if you used Google Sheets or Smartsheet, it's essentially the same thing. It's just an online database, but you can take your database, turn it into an electronic form, and that's exactly what we did. And the form flows as you're submitting your hazard, submitting your incident, whatever you're doing. The questions will organize themselves based on the answers that you're placing into it. Take that form, attach it to a QR code, plaster your QR code everywhere, and you have now have an easy to use, easy to access reporting system that feeds right into your database. The other great thing about the system is on the back end, once a report is submitted, safety department's automatically notified. So it's a full circle. The employee knows where to go and how to get to the system, submit it easily, and then the safety department's getting notified pretty immediately.
So you have QR codes posted throughout the facility, and basically you could take your camera on your phone, highlight it over, click the link, and then submit the report.
Correct. And if you've ever gone through, for anybody listening, if you've gone through your DCTs for the SMS program with the FAA, there is one, I believe it's for safety policy, where they can go interview employees. There's three questions they ask them. It's do you know where to report, how to report? Do you know what you're supposed to be reporting? And we were almost to the point of just telling employees, you don't even need to say anything at this point. Just point to the poster. Because when you scan that QR code, it brings up the SMS program and it brings up reporting. It made it so simplistic. And the FAA did try to pry a little bit. They're like, well, this is almost too simple. I'm like, no, that's the idea. It's our program. We wanted to make it as easy as possible to use that the employees didn't even need to respond to. All they do is walk up. They're able to scan it. Or they can go to the online website on a desktop. We had it bookmarked on every computer. And there's all their stuff. And it wasn't like it was all 50 SOPs that we had and all the stuff and really cluttered. It was just simplified of what they needed. They asked, answered a few questions. They were able to get into the direction they needed to go.
What was the reporting process like before that?
It would be a PDF that they emailed to the safety department. And then where we started getting into, and this was a little bit before us going for SMS, we tried to start – try to look into different electronic reporting options, because when you were getting the PDF in the email, then I would have to take the information out of the PDF and put it in the database for tracking. And we're like, it's doubling the work. And especially if it was a handwritten PDF, then you're trying to translate someone's chicken scratch and then type it up properly. And half the time you're going back to the person that submitted it. And if you have to go back to the person submitting it, do you have anonymous reporting? Not necessarily. So that's where we were getting into. We need something better than a PDF coming through. We need something easier to use, because also with the PDF is you are now giving the employee every option of reporting. You're giving them hazmat spill, injury, damage, all those kinds of things when they might just need the one, and then they're taking 20, 30 minutes of their time to read over this giant form. They don't need that. So the electronic reporting allowed us to make it much more consistent and tie it into where they can just only utilize what they needed.
All right. So basically what you were running into is that up front, it was kind of a cumbersome process where essentially somebody would have an incident that happens or they want to report something. They'd have to go find a PDF. The PDF would have all of the options and possibilities of what this could be. I've got to sift through. I've got to put in what I need, whether I type it, maybe I'm not super familiar with Acrobat or whatever it might be, or my trial expired on my computer, whatever annoying thing happens with that. Now I've got to take that email to somebody. Somebody's got to hand jam that into a system for tracking. And so basically the philosophy was, can we find something that prompts them with the minimal amount of information that says what's happening? I select that dropdown and then I put in the relevant info that automatically goes back to a database. So you're making that reporting process really streamlined so there's no confusion. And then when you get that information on the back end, what are you guys doing with it? How do you use it? Are you using it to kind of gather data, or are you using it to actually like influence decisions and make changes? What's the value of that data?
Sky's the limit. When you're getting solid data coming in, and you, one of the best things about going down a path like this to where you are showing the employees and the people who are utilizing the system that we care about your time to the point where I don't want you to print this form off and submit it. I want it to be easy and streamlined as possible. They're going to realize that you actually have their best interest at heart, and you're going to start getting more quality data. You're going to get that those better reports coming through that are actually usable. You're going to get those hazards that have some solid data, and you can actually go do an investigation. You can go make improvements. So what we were doing with the data at the time, multiple different things. Are we looking at improvements for the organization? Somebody submitting a hazard that the lighting in their shop is bad and we need to improve their work area. The other thing we were doing was some solid metrics to show them that their reports coming through are not here to go on a witch hunt and see which location had the worst behavior, but to actually show that the organization overall is doing very well. Or do we have an area of risk that we need to focus on a little bit more? So the metrics were a big part of it. And we were actually able to use the metrics in a couple different areas. We were able to use it with insurance companies because the insurance company wants to have solid data of how the organization is doing to work on your rate. The sales team was able to use it with customers when they go, hey, I'm going to trust you guys with my multi-million dollar aircraft. How much damage have you had? And we can go, hey, we have had damages. It was a transparency that the customer appreciated. And I think a lot of MROs might look at it and go, why are you telling your customers that you've damaged airplanes before? I'm like, everybody does. Everybody does. It's, are you able to step up and go, yes, we have had issues. We have learned from issues. We have revamped the training. And this is the timeline on how we did it. And here's our metrics now. It's one thing to have a mistake. It's another to have a repeat mistake. But we can show tracked and trended data at that time that we have learn from things moving forward, and this is why you have a solid place to bring your aircraft versus someone saying, oh, we work, you know, thousands of aircraft every year and we haven't had a single incident. It's like, sure you have, you just don't report it. And if you do report it, you're not transparent about it.
Okay. And so you mentioned something that was interesting, the witch hunt aspect. Mm-hmm. When you implement something like this, what is the skepticism that you get from the team? And rightfully so. I mean, I'm sure plenty of people have worked at jobs where you try to do the right thing and you do get punished for it. So what are some of the ways that shows up when you want to roll this out? What's kind of the pushback that you get and how do you work through that? And then what kind of metrics do you show that are important to the team?
Absolutely. So, number one, your safety team needs to be the one that makes the first step. It's not going to be the employees because you need to establish and build trust in the system. And I know we're going to talk about FlexJet here in a second. That's exactly what we had to do at FlexJet. We couldn't just be a brand new director of safety walking in going, hey, do this. And they're going to be like, why? We don't trust your system at all. Why would we do that? And honestly, I'm realistic. I wouldn't want them to. I need to prove to you that it's a trustworthy system that you're going to be submitting your most vulnerable data to. So you will get pushback on it. You need to build the trust by your actions. You need to start taking those reports and actually giving them feedback. A response is your first step. Actually doing something with it is going to be your next step. And then the metrics is your third step, showing them that it's been proven month over month, year over year, that we are making improvements and having great strides towards things. So what I like to do is every month I would show an incident blotter. Not everything and the information was always vetted for anything personal, but I would show, hey, here's a couple incidents that we had. Here's a couple hazards that were submitted. And then what is always the remediated action that we took to actually fix the items coming through? Did we take any steps? Has nothing happened with it? What is the actual risk of it? So there's a lot of things you can do with the data coming through to start to build that trust. And you mentioned metrics. One of the best metrics I think that any MRO can use is when you have data coming through, you should be doing a risk assessment on everything. Doesn't matter if it's reactive to an incident or a proactive risk assessment to a hazard coming through. You should be assessing every single thing for risk, no matter how big or how small. The people who only do a risk assessment when they completely total an aircraft, you'll never figure out why you got to that point because you didn't do risk assessments on the tiny things first. You don't build up to that. So the metric I like is
what would an example of that be? Because that makes sense, like long term of it's not just you have this big incident that happens all of a sudden, but you were perfect before then. It's like many steps leading up to that. What would an example of that be? And then let's get back to the metric.
Sure. So the example I always like to use is a fire bottle. It's a relatively inexpensive event that almost every MRO will have. I blew a fire bottle in the Army a couple times. Almost every technician has hit the wrong button and heard the pop or bumped something in the cabin and you hear the pop of the fire bottle. So it's a very common mistake. It's a very common thing that happens. And it's for one fire bottle, it's relatively inexpensive, of course, depending on the organization, but it's probably not going to even bankrupt a tiny one plane operation. So that is a relatively small incident that most people would say, why report that? It's so small. It's insignificant. It's just part of maintenance. So let's say it's about $1,500 to recharge that fire bottle. If you have a large scale operation where you're working 30 to 50 aircraft at a single time, hundreds of technicians, and all of them have that same opportunity to blow a fire bottle, you could be looking at a pretty significant risk, especially with the likelihood of that taking place. So if you put it on a risk assessment, what somebody would normally say, we don't even need to report that. I've actually ran the numbers for multiple different organizations. They always land right in the middle at almost a medium. And if you have a legitimate SMS program, a medium risk means you have to take action. So your SMS tells you have to take action, but this was something that you weren't even bothering with reporting because you thought it was so insignificant. It's those little things that on the severity scale are relatively small. They're not very severe. However, because they happen so often, that likelihood bumps up your risk. And now you should be tracking and trending it. You should be doing something about it. You should be putting in more training and looking into that incident. So that's one of those little ones that most people wouldn't think about, but they're pretty big on the scale.
And that's where the rubber kind of meets the road with this, right? Because if you have a simple reporting structure and it's easy to actually report something like that, for somebody to take legitimately 1 to 2 minutes to scan a code on the wall, to fill out a form and put it in, it's relatively easy. Whereas somebody can make the case and say, hey, it's not worth my time that this takes me 30 minutes to an hour to report something that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But then, so that's kind of a bridge to the actual technicians and the team working it and making it easy to report. But then also too, you bring something up. If you're at a larger scale organization and that's $1,500 a pop and it's fairly common, that's even a way to have the conversation with the executive team that might not really, they might not be aware of all the safety risks. And so they might not necessarily put as high of a value on it as maybe somebody who's been in those shoes. But if you can tie that even to a dollar amount to get them to see, hey, across 300 technicians over the course of 2 or 3 years, you might be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on these kinds of incidents. This is just one simple thing. And you can even use, it seems like you can use financials to get executive team buy-in to build a culture of safety. Am I thinking about it the right way?
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially if I've seen a couple organizations where the executive team has that buy-in, but they haven't built up the reporting culture yet. So then your execs are asking the right question of, hey, we're spending, like you said, it could be into the hundreds of thousands for these minor incidents. We're dropping this kind of money on these damages and these incidents. We have no reports to show for it. Well, it turns out they're only reporting the big stuff, the million-dollar engine or something like that. And it's like, well, that's not where your risk lies. Your risk lies in all of the little stuff. I didn't pull the right circuit breaker and I fried this. I didn't, you know, ground this and now this is damaged. I don't have a drop tool policy and now I'm dropping it through the leading edge of a Gulfstream wing and now I got to replace a huge section. I didn't do proper tug and tow training and now I'm busting wingtips off on hangar doors and hangar rash. All these things add up. And when you look at it as a single incident, some of them might be insignificant to where the cost is low enough to where that's not going to impact the budget line item. But when you broaden that out over the entire organization, if you have multiple locations, multiple technicians, tons of aircraft and work, you are looking at a substantial line item on the budget just for mistakes that could be preventable with the proper risk assessments, so you know what you're looking for.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So let's go back to your metric.
Yeah. So my favorite metric goes off of these risk assessments. So you never want to penalize your employees for the amount of reporting that they're doing. So you never want to just produce a metric that is, we've had 15 reports per 10,000 hours work, because then they'll look at that and go, oh, well, that's a lot. How do you know it's a lot? All right. That's minuscule for an Amazon, but that's a lot for a mom and pop shop. The quantity of reports per hours worked is not significant unless you tie it back to something as a baseline. So what I like to use is how many reports we have per 10,000 hours is our baseline versus how many reports per 10,000 hours were rated as a medium or higher risk. And when you see those two line items going against each other, what you'll see is hopefully you will see the amount of reports going up and the amount of medium or higher, your elevated risk reports, going down. That shows you two things. We're improving because our elevated risk is going down, but we also have a solid reporting culture because our reports are going up. And it will also give you a couple flags to look for to see if your reporting culture is shifting. If you see the two lines starting to come together, that will show you that for every couple reports we're getting in, we are seeing an increase of elevated risk. So that's kind of a yellow flag. Why are we seeing an increase in these elevated risks? Our lines are starting to come together. When those lines cross, that means every report you're receiving in is a medium or higher risk, and you now have a very risky situation on your hands. So it gives you good predictability down the line when you can start seeing those metrics move together.
Interesting. So you're seeing you're getting insight into two different factors. One, the reporting mm-hmm. culture and whether that's working, and then also mm-hmm. are we actually getting safer or less safe over time?
Correct.
So when you mentioned actually like having the conversations with the team members that report these, right? Like, mm-hmm. hey, you reported this, we're either working towards it or here's the situation. How do you give that information back to the team members? Is it through team meetings? Do you address people one-on-one? Do you go make changes and then say, here's the process changes that we did? Like, what does that look like to let people know this isn't just going into a vacuum?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing you need to do is when the initial report comes through, depending on what it is, obviously if it's I scraped my knee on something and I got a Band-Aid out of the first aid cabinet, there's not much that you need to track and trend from that. But your bigger ones, possibly, tool and calibration, wrong sealant used. I don't know. There's a ton that you could put in there where more questions are going to be needed. First thing you need to do is what most would call an investigation. And I'm learning to not like that word. There's a great safety philosopher. I'll call him Simon Mayhome. He's out of the UK, and he calls it a learning review, because you want to learn from it. The idea is not, as we mentioned before, to go on a witch hunt and point blame and accuse somebody of doing anything. Because most likely, every mistake you made most likely did not intend to be a mistake when it originally happened. All right. Sure. I know there's some people who have a malice intent, but a mistake is just an unintended outcome of something that you meant to intentionally do. You wanted to do this and it had an unintended outcome, and now we need to figure out why that is. So you want to sit down and talk with them, and you want to make sure that the employee knows that this is not out to get you. We are trying to gather as much information as possible, so we know, do we need to revamp training? Is something need changed? Were you properly equipped to do the job that you were doing? So that's the first part of the information. Once you do your full learning review and you get everything together, you have tons of different options to get them out. One that is most common would be a monthly safety meeting. We're going to go through a monthly safety meeting. There's going to be an incident blotter. We're going to go over those things. But what I like to do is, little videos. We just had a hazard report come in from a cabin server a couple weeks back. over the design of some drawers on one of the aircraft. As you open them, had a pinch factor on the fingers, and she, you know, submitted the hazard to us, and we're like, this is awesome. It's a quick fix. It was pretty minor in nature, but we used that and built out into a video of how somebody utilized the system, submitted the hazard, and immediately got it into the hands of engineering in the interior shop, and a fix is in place for it, and could show them full circle. So little videos are great. Newsletters, monthly safety meetings, YouTube videos that can go out to the entire company, putting information up into your executive team if they do like a weekly chat with the board so they know what's going on. Read through safety promotion for SMS and utilize anything that's listed in there. There are multiple different platforms and pathways to promote your safety program. Use them all, because what might work for somebody might like reading the report, but your up and coming generation might want to watch a video or a quick 60-second like TikTok on what is actually going on. So utilize all facets of information sharing that you can.
Okay. So basically it's take the info, make the resolutions you need, and then get that information back out to the team and kind of meet them where they're at, whether that's their Correct. Videos, PDFs, whatever it might be, meetings, or really a combo of all of the above that actually work for you.
Correct. One of the best tools any safety program and safety department can use to build and gain trust in the safety program is to properly utilize safety promotion and using every avenue possible to get your information back out, because that not only shows them that they were listened to, but that their concern had enough meat on the bone that something is actually being done about it.
Nice. And so what has it been like to go from roughly 700 employees that you're overseeing safety for now about 300 aircraft and about 5,000 employees? What's that been like?
Well, now we are, I guess I would be about a solid year, a little bit more fully into the transition, and I feel like I have my feet under me. I will admit the first month was, it wasn't crazy. It was overwhelming, and not in a bad way. I thought Constant was a complex organization because we had multiple locations, and we handled everything an MRO could handle. Full interior shop, full paint shop, the works. Going to Flexjet, where it is a global footprint of an organization, a fully established organization. And that was the other thing. You had two very well-established companies coming together. So, of course, there's probably going to be a little butting heads, I would imagine. But it was incredible. It was exciting. Every day was different. Getting to learn about a part of the business that you were involved with but not working underneath. Because, you know, like I said, we were sister companies. And it was, we could see them from afar almost, but to actually get to work with them now, was incredible. So, yeah, I'd say the first month was a little, crazy, trying to get your feet underneath you, trying to figure out who has what policy, what's working well, what isn't working well, how can we, mix these in? And I think now we have a great groove going. Things are going very smoothly. The safety department is well established now. And what I love doing is what we keep calling the around the world. We're hitting all of our locations and speaking with all of the technicians face to face in their own hangar. So that way they know who the safety team is, why we're here, and that we're here as a resource for them. So like you mentioned, it is a big, it is an enormous company, but it is absolutely exciting. And I love being involved in an organization that is always forward thinking. Not what are we doing today, what are we doing next year, in 5 years? How are we shaping the organization today to be sustainable in 5 years? That's the one thing I love the most about this organization.
And so you've got a team. Do you have like a team that's kind of located around the world, or are they traveling around the world?
Located around the world. So we have a team in Italy. We have, there's a small maintenance facility out there as well. We have a team in the UK, with a full safety program in the UK. The majority of us are located in, Cleveland, Ohio as well. But yeah, we're we're everywhere, and we try to be at all of our locations so that everybody feels equally supported. Just because you're a corporate safety team does not mean you have to sit at corporate and wait for the things to come to you. Go out and find out. You know, it doesn't matter how big your organization is. Get out on the hangar floor. Walk through the hangar floor. Talk to them. Be a face that they can recognize, or else why would they submit any reports to you? Why would they voice any concerns to you? They need to be able to see you.
How do you, as a leader, how do you convey that to your team? Like, how do you build that safety culture within the safety team, and that culture of like, go find stuff, be proactive, introduce? Like, how have you found success leading a team like that and kind of shaping that culture?
I have a great mentor above me, Kent Stauffer. He's the VP of safety for us, and he manages our safety team extremely well. And then Chuck Starkowski is at the One Sky level. And their viewpoint is exactly that of safety cannot be confined to an office, because it is not something you do. It's a culture, it's a feeling, it's a sense of security that you are coming into an organization that cares for you. And the only way to convey that culture and that sense of security that our employees are working in an area that actually cares that they go home in the same shape they came into work, and cares that not only do they go home in the same state, but that they go home energized and better, and that they work in an area that they're comfortable in. The only way to do that is to get out and actually talk with them. You know, our pilots are all over the world at all times. So communication to them via, electronic, via your newsletters and things like that needs to be continuous. They need to continually be feeling supported and able to be contacted. And then our mechanics in the hangars, we need to always be out there supporting them as well, because that culture, like I said, can't be just written into an SOP, and that sense of security can't just be put out into a newsletter once a month. It needs to be it's a relationship, essentially. We need to fuel that at all times.
That's awesome, man. Congrats on
thank you.
Moving into this role. It's very cool.
I love
it. So, all right, I feel like we could talk about this for a couple hours. So maybe let's put a pin in this, and we'll probably have to schedule round two for this, but we'll see what kind of questions we get from the listeners. And we can do that. But before we wrap up, is there anything else that we should touch on?
Anything else we should touch on? Not necessarily. I think that about covers. Is there any other questions you had at this time?
No, I'm good. Well, probably 30 more, but like I said, let's
30 more conversations. Yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks for joining me on here. I really appreciate it. And, where can people get in touch with you?
LinkedIn would probably be best. I'm definitely on LinkedIn. Email address would be tim.wade@flexjet.com. Absolutely loving what I'm doing. And the beautiful part of safety right now is that it's not necessarily a marketable thing. And I think anybody who's involved in business aviation safety understands that you can reach out to all of us. I've got contacts at the big OEMs. I've got contacts at the MROs, and we chat all the time. You know, hey, I'm kind of stuck on this thing. What do you want? You don't want to reinvent the wheel in this role. So reach out if you guys need anything. Any MRO, you're welcome to reach out. We'd be happy to help you and get you on the right path for what you need. Especially I'm involved with the MBAA Safety Committee as well. We have what's called a need to know packet. And that helps get you a good foothold on SOPs and different programs and things. So before you kill yourself reinventing something, reach out. We're happy to get you in the right direction.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.